Hey guys, with sports betting season in full force with football here, you need a sports book with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BETUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 1-800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. You'll receive 125% sign-up bonus by using bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses. Also, BetUS is known among America's favorite sportsbook for lots of reasons. Bet on team and player props, loads of NFL futures, UFC matches, PGA golf, live betting on most sports. The online casino has hundreds of games. The Racebooks has all the horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable. Follow my lead and get your phone, online, and sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. Bet US. Welcome in, everybody, to Scout's Eye on College Football. It's Monday, November 8th, and boy, if we got a lot to get to today. Man, what a weekend it was in college football. The upheaval continues. You should expect that by now, because that's what we seem to have. So we've got a lot to get to today. We're going to talk about all of those games as well as look ahead to this upcoming week, hand out some game balls, got some news around the world of college football, some coaching news, some upheaval that's the result of some of the games' results this weekend, as well as other things that are going on. Around the world, we got a lot to get to. Some of the news and notes with the coaching moves. What does it mean? Texas Tech has found their guy. Scott Frost is going to remain at Nebraska. Changes going on the coaching staffs at Florida, in particular, Oregon State, Washington, UMass letting go their head coach, Walt Bell. So no shortage of information that we're going to get to today. Kind of some of the breakdowns of what was a busy week. We've learned a little bit more, as we always do. But, man, there's a whole lot we don't know. And when you look at the calendar, starting is we're November, and we've now got 3 weeks left to go before we start, before we finish the regular season. A lot yet to be determined. A lot of football left, and yet I just think that we are in a real intriguing time where there's no clear number two, and there's going to be a lot that's going to take place between now and then. So as you can tell, just a bunch to get to today. A couple of things to get out of the way. A reminder to get all the breakdowns, the film room breakdowns, of all of these games, all of these teams. You can go to LandryFootball.com for that. We encourage you to do so. We'd appreciate it if you do so. Join us there. Get all the detailed film room breakdowns of all the conference-by-conference games, all the NFL games. We got it all for you here. Get this podcast, very simply, if you're listening to us live, you want to catch us in a podcast form, go to LandryFootball.com and you can find out easily where you can find us. So that's a couple of things to look out for. And then we'd also ask you to check us out live. Why? We want to join us live in the chat room. Bring your comments, bring your questions. That's what we're here for. So go to LandryFootball.com, click on follow Chris on Twitch, and that'll take you right there, right at the top, and it'll get us right to there. So the news and notes starts, I'm going to start with Nebraska. Scott Frost is going to be retained. They're going to restructure his contract. The reasoning behind it is Trev Alberts, the new athletic director, has only been there 4 months. Of course, Scott is a Nebraska guy. If you watch this Nebraska team, it's pretty clear that Scott's got these guys playing hard. And I think they have played well in spurts. What they've done is made the same mistakes over and over and over again. And I think if you take the pure positives of what he's done, you can make a case that things look pretty good. Things look pretty impressive. Things look somewhat encouraging. Yet it's the mistakes that maybe you think if you stop beating yourselves, and I don't think anybody has beat themselves more consistently in big games. Nobody's lost more one possession games than Nebraska under Scott Frost. So what is the takeaway here? And we've talked about this a little bit. I question whether Scott would be back because I didn't know that he had the answers. And obviously, in meeting with Trev Alberts, he's at least indicated to them that there's changes that need to be made, and he does have some answers. So therefore, keeping him, keeping one of their own, and trying to see if they can't sort through some of those issues is what they're going to do. Now, Scott is going to relieve offensive coordinator receiver coach Matt Lubick, let him go. Offensive line coach and run game coordinator Greg Austin has been let go. Running back coach Ryan Held has been let go. And quarterback coach Mario Verduzco has been let go. So four guys have been let go, effective immediately. There may be more changes. I would certainly think that looking at the special teams and how they organize, how they work, that there's a lot of things that are going to need to be done. This is not a indication of things are going well or going like they had hoped. On the contrary, it's an indication of we got some issues, but we think that Scott can fix it. Whether you can or not, the future's going to tell. That's item number one on the coaching front. Item number two, Florida has fired Todd Grantham and offensive line coach John Hevesy, a long time a confidant and assistant for Dan Mullen. Very clear that after having discussions with the higher-ups at Florida and a lot of pressure there, that things are not going well, and what a disastrous loss that was to South Carolina. We had one of our loyal listeners, it may have been Spartan Bartman, asked me, is there any threat of Florida losing to South Carolina? I think he asked me on Friday's SEC show, and I said, absolutely not. I think I laughed. Not laughed at Spartan Bartman. I laughed at the notion that this Florida team is struggling. They are not going to lose to South Carolina. They not only lost to South Carolina, they got their ass kicked against South Carolina. They look like a completely dysfunctional and a team that has collapsed. It was clear that that was a sign that something needed to be done to shake things up. I don't know that getting rid of Todd Grantham and John Hevesy is going to help them the rest of the year. Not the point. I think they're moving forward, and they're wanting to move forward in a way that is going to open up the door for them to add perhaps a better, more established recruiter. Recruiters, they're going to have to look at that. They're going to have to look, obviously, at a new defensive leadership because this is completely broken there. The talent level has slipped at Florida. There's no question about that. But the talent level hasn't slipped to the point to where they're beneath South Carolina, much less beneath South Carolina to the point where that team would blow them out. No. That's a combination of other stuff. That's a combination of, look, you can't just win with talent. And oh, by the way, when you play poorly, this is where it takes you. If you don't play with focus, you don't play with energy, you don't play with direction, you don't play together, you're not good enough to overcome the sloppiness this is what you get. You get the LSU game. You get this game. People have asked me, what does this mean for Dan Mullen? What does it mean for Dan Mullen? These moves suggest clearly, as we've said all along, Dan Mullen is coming back. You don't really make this move right now of the assistants if it means that you're in danger. I mean, why would you make this move if you basically are going to get fired yourself? Basically, Dan has been told in some way, shape, or form, or has been led to believe that he's going to get a chance to fix this. And I do think it's the right move. I think Dan has a lot of good qualities as a coach. I think he is capable of fixing it. I don't know that he will. I don't know how successful he'll be, but he's capable of fixing this. He will be given a chance to fix this. And we'll see how well he does. Is it possible that he could be out at the end of the year? Anything's possible. But that would require a even further collapse. Maybe even more of an issue of dysfunction. Maybe some issues between the administration and Dan that would suggest, this is not going to work. That Dan won't be able to fix this. He said he could fix it, and we had the good conversations, but now this is not working. Sure, it could happen. I don't know that 100% assurances have been made, but I think there are strong indicators that Dan is coming back, or else the move would have been a little different. Oregon State fired defensive coordinator Tim Tebashar. Jonathan Smith fired him, and Trent Bray, the inside backer coach, is going to call the plays the rest of the year. Washington has really struggled on offense. John Donovan, the Huskies offensive coordinator, has been fired. Wide receiver coach Junior Adams will assume play calling duties there. And offensive quality control coach Peyton McCollum will be promoted to quarterback coach. Walt Bell has been fired by UMass, 2-23. So that is some of the latest. There'll be other news coming out. Oh, by the way, Joey McGuire, we mentioned him as one of the candidates at Texas Tech. Texas Tech wanted Sonny Dykes. Sonny was not interested in returning to Lubbock. I think Sonny has an interest. If he's going to leave SMU, it'll be for TCU or something else that might come up that's even more attractive. But I think that is kind of where things are headed there. I think that it is a sign, again, that they weren't able to get done what they needed to get done to get Sonny interested in the job. Joey's a very good coach. He's the assistant head coach and outside backer coach at Baylor. He's really, really good, and he's got Texas ties, and I think he's ready for this opportunity. So we'll see where this goes for TCU, which is up next, and whether they can get Sonny Dykes to come across. So that's the latest news in the coaching world. Some other news, I'm trying to think anything that is worth it. Of course, the other issues, Anthony Richardson sustained a head injury against Georgia. Trying to think if there's anything that is necessary there. How about, I've been hard on him. I want to be careful. I don't want to be ugly. I want to be rude. I don't know how else to say it. What a smart-ass comment Mike Leach had again. and what a colossal jerk he can be at a time. Yeah, they lost a game, and it's typical, though, of Mike Leach. It's never his fault. He always has lesser players. It's never about his coaching. It's always, you know, somebody else's fault. And there's no question they struggled kicking the football through the uprights. What a complete jackass move to make the cute comment. So let me get another laugh to talk about how we're going to have open tryouts for a field goal kicker. Well, how about you recruit one? How about you coach one? How about you develop one? How about you don't put yourself in that situation, Mike? And of course, it's never your fault. I just think that shows a lack of class, a lack of leadership. It's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. Uncalled for. So we'll kind of recap the weekend that was. And I don't know where we're going to go with the rankings. I'm going to be honest with you. It started off the day with Georgia being dominant as they always are. Nebraska being competitive to some degree, but Ohio State taking it over. We warn you that Wake Forest, North Carolina was going to be a whole lot of points. It was. And that neither team were going to be able to stop one another. And that's exactly what it was. So we had the upset of North Carolina over Wake Forest. We were interested in watching the quarterback play in the Ole Miss Liberty game. We did. We did not think Liberty would beat Ole Miss. They did. In that early window, it was Minnesota. Can anybody stand up in the Big Ten West and say, I want it, I'll take it. Probably going to end up being Wisconsin, isn't it? It's going to be back where it all began and started, and we're going to end there. And good for them. Minnesota's played well, bragged on them. They've done a good job. They're down to their sixth or seventh starting running back. Still running the football well. But not this week. Illinois doing a really good job against them. Then we get into the second window, and it was the big-time performance defensively by Texas A&M. What a elite performance defensively. They were able to create some points with their defense, and that was enough. It was certainly a struggle for Auburn's offense, and you can get the breakdowns over at LandryFootball.com in detail, but it was really about A&M's defense and how they were able to perform. Great, great job there. That was the highlight of the second window. But then it was TCU getting a big win. getting a big win over Baylor and upsetting them. At that same window, it was Arkansas beating Mississippi State. And then we warn you that look out for Purdue. We did say Purdue can throw the football. And you can throw the football effectively against this Michigan State defense, this secondary. And they did it. They won, and it really wasn't all that close. Very, very impressive there. Wisconsin rolls. Then we get to the third window, and got to give LSU a lot of credit. They played hard. No doubt about it. They played hard. They played about as well as you could hope for them to play, considering the missing pieces that they have. What a uninspired and unimpressive performance by Alabama. It's the more and more I look at it and I hear Nick, and I've only talked to him a couple of times during the season, talked to him more during the offseason, but this team just they're having a hard time reaching him, which is why you're hearing him say things that are not the typical response, meaning I don't know. I'm not in there every day. I don't get the feeling that his players, it's not that they're not trying hard. I think they lack leadership. I don't think they get what it takes to be successful the way other Alabama teams have been successful. I think those are really problematic at this point. And I think something we got to look at going forward and really question, is this Alabama team good enough to win a national title? It doesn't look like it. It looks like only Georgia is good enough to win it. And if Georgia plays the way they're playing, everyone's playing for second. That's the way it looks. That's the way it feels. Is that going to be the way it's going to be? Well, it depends. What if Georgia doesn't play well? What if they have that off night? Well, then what happens then? I mean, we'll get into that in a little bit because I don't know. There's not an impressive look at number two. But that was going on in that window. And then we said, Kentucky, don't get in a shootout with Tennessee. I thought Kentucky could move the football against Tennessee's defense, and they did. But you're going to need to control that game, control the football, and limit the possessions. Good Lord, did they control the football? Tennessee had the ball for 13 minutes and outscored them. More explosive big plays. Defensive breakdowns for Kentucky, giving up explosive plays. Kentucky's made mistakes. Now Kentucky is headed towards a 9-3 season when it looked like it was nothing's ever a cakewalk. But it looked like it was going to be easy street to an 11-1. They got Vanderbilt, New Mexico State, and at Louisville. Methinks they end up 9-3. That is not what they had hoped for. Not what they had hoped for by any stretch of the imagination. Beginning of the season, yes. Not now. Good win, Josh Heupel. Another good win. Texas gets dominated by Iowa State. Clemson survives Louisville. Michigan gets it done. Oregon, Washington. Physical. Ugly to some degree. Washington, as we mentioned, on the cusp of making changes. I don't know in watching this Oregon team how good they are. I mean, I've watched them every game. They're good. It's just tough to find kind of exactly due to their limitations. They're very, very sketchy from a passing game standpoint. South Carolina, again, dominating Florida. That was in this time frame. Iowa finding a little offense, emphasis on little. Colorado storming the field. Yes, I said storming the field. Because of their win at Oregon State. And then, that pretty much set the stage for me. So as I looked at kind of where things are at this point, I'm not through my film grade work for this week, obviously. That's obvious this early. As we get into the rankings this week, and again, everyone wants to talk about it, so I feel compelled to do it. I think it's a waste of time because I just think it's much ado about nothing now, but it's getting close enough. I will admit this. There's 3 weeks left, and if you got any questions, by the way, join us in the chat room. Got a couple coming in. We'll get to it in a mailbag segment. But who is number two? I can make a case against more teams than I can. Look, I think that things will play out. Alabama doesn't look impressive and certainly probably don't look like they deserve to be ranked that high. But the reality is, if they win, and it's a big if they can even go to Jordan-Hare and win, playing like they are. But they've been so inconsistent. What are you really getting? What type of team are you getting? We know, as unlikely as it appears to me on film, that they would beat Georgia. If they do, they're going to make the playoffs. And when they got Arkansas as well. They got Auburn and Arkansas before they can think about Georgia. And that is not a given. Trust me, neither one, the way they're playing, because you don't know what you're going to get. But if they do, they're in. Oklahoma's got it all in front of them. Don't know. They didn't play last week, as you know. We'll see what they're able to do. Oregon still is some work to do. Ohio State as well. I think they'll beat Michigan State and Michigan, but they have some work to do. Michigan State, I mentioned, went down to Purdue. That didn't surprise me. There's a lot of, Cincinnati's still got a shot. Cincinnati's not impressive. But Cincinnati's kind of the just hang around and everybody else might fall apart. If you're unbeaten and everybody's losing, that gives them a chance to at least get into the four. I don't know how this is going to play out because the film tells me teams are a little, when I look at an Alabama and I see how inconsistent they are, I can make the case that they are not only when they are really good Alabama, that they look like, hey, this is the second best team in the country. But for most of the LSU game and for other stretches during the year, they don't look like a top 10 team. So what are you getting? I mean, you're getting both is what you're getting. Cincinnati's not that impressive. Oklahoma's not that impressive. Oregon's not. Ohio State, not so much. But of the ones that have not looked impressive, I'd probably move them up a little bit. Certainly in my film grading, I will. When I'm done. And we'll have all of that over for you at LandryFootball.com. What's your thoughts out there about all these teams? Questions? We're going to get to that in a little bit. I want to get into this week's schedule, but I want to tell you a little bit about my good friends over at BetQL Daily. Do you feel like the last one out when it comes to sports betting? Don't know where to start? Understand where the market is moving, which smart bets are out there, and have some fun listening while you're at it. BetQL Daily, sponsored by FanDuel, is the must-listen show for sports bettors and sports fans alike. They're a great listen. They're fun, they're informative, very helpful. Host Joe Ostrowski, Joe Gigolo, and Aaron Hacksworth serve up wagertainment, the sports talk you love, with the betting insights you need each weekday. Find out where the market is moving across all the week's biggest sporting events. Miss out on earlier games? BetQL Daily has you covered there too, with recaps from some of the biggest recent moments in sports. If you're not sure where to start with sports betting, start with BetQL Daily, presented by FanDuel. Listen weekdays 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Odyssey, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. So this week, as we tend to look ahead, Michigan-Penn State is somewhat intriguing as both of those teams in the Big Ten East are alive. Oklahoma-Baylor, can Baylor play spoiler here? That's in the early window. Georgia-Tennessee, I don't expect Tennessee to win, but I do like the challenge that it's going to provide for Georgia, a different challenge, if you will. If you look at this Georgia team, the teams that they've played, they have not they've not had an Ole Miss style. And again, I think this Tennessee offense, with its pace, with its explosive plays, the pace and the explosive playmaking ability is something that's going to challenge Georgia in a way that they've not been challenged thus far. Now, do I like their chances of surviving it with the way their defense is playing? I do. But I do like the contrast. Minnesota-Iowa, like that matchup. Obviously, huge one in the Big Ten. As, again, it looks like to me that it's Wisconsin, Purdue are playing the best ball right now. I think Minnesota's still got a shot if they win this one. Iowa, I still worry about. But, again, Minnesota's collapse last week is very, very intriguing. Purdue-Iowa, Ohio State. Look, I don't like the matchup for Purdue in this game like I did against Michigan State, but it's certainly going to be a challenge for the Buckeyes. I think they'll play well, play better, and they'll need to. Texas A&M Ole Miss, a big one over in the SEC. It's clear right now A&M looks like the second best team in the SEC. Hey, would you make a case for A&M looking right now like the best team in the West? Think about that for a second. You can make that case. They beat Alabama. They lost to Mississippi State. They lost to Arkansas. But right now, living in the moment, you can absolutely make the case that A&M's playing better ball than Alabama. They have the head-to-head, and they're playing better. And let's remind folks, if A&M wins this game against Ole Miss, and I do like their chances, they've got LSU at the end of the year. And if Auburn or Arkansas were to beat Alabama, it's the Aggies, if they win out, that represent the West. So what a turnaround. And if they don't win it, you know they're going to be kicking their backside from one end to the other in that Mississippi State game. Now, you wonder, though, and this is how people don't factor this into the equation, but sometimes it's the issues that come up in games like that that lead you to make some substantive changes that allow you to come back, maybe play loose, play free, do some things different. Maybe if they beat Mississippi State, maybe they don't beat Alabama. Don't know. We'll never know. Different circumstances, but they're certainly looking back at it. Arkansas, LSU, Notre Dame, Virginia, TCU, Oklahoma State, NC State, Wake Forest is one I'll be looking hard at as we're looking at the ACC and trying to figure out who's going to represent the Atlantic, as you've got Clemson just sneaking up behind everyone. NC State and Wake, though, are in control at this point. And then Oregon's got a sneaky Washington State team. Those are some of the key matchups I'm looking for this weekend. Northwestern, Wisconsin, I forgot to mention them early. Wisconsin looking like they're playing much better right now. So those are some of the matchups. We're going to have the detailed breakdowns again for you by conference as we do every week over at Landry Football. Couple of other notes. Working on an update on the LSU coaching search that I'm going to tell you what's going on there and what the administration is putting out to the media for the purposes of trying to get the fan bases to fan the LSU fan base to buy in to what I would call their ceiling candidate. They've got a guy that they know will take the job, and they're putting it out there trying to get folks excited about it, because as they try to swing for the fences with their top two candidates, they want to, if they don't, not able to get that. And I would say that's probably less than 50-50 on both, but we'll see. You'll see they're trying to set the stage for the selling point of that being the guy. We're going to get into that more in the SEC podcast. I will next hour. And certainly I'm going to have the details over at Landry Football. We'll have more on the Florida search, more on what's going on at Nebraska, TCU, et al. Over there. So check for that as well. Game balls this week. Top performances around the country. I thought hard about it, but I got to go with at least the offensive player of the week, Aiden O'Connell of Purdue. He was spectacular. 40 of 54, 536 yards, three touchdowns in that 40-29 upset over Michigan State. It had upset written all over it. Felt it. It looked like it. It was the way Purdue was playing. But more importantly, I think that Michigan State, as impressive as they have been, and as much credit as I give them, they clearly have not beaten a really good team outside of Michigan. But really good job by him. I thought Will Anderson in that win against LSU was dominant for Alabama. I thought Devin Lloyd was dominant for Utah this week against Stanford on Friday night. What a performance that he had. How about Shedrick Banks, the freshman from TCU, is one of my freshmen of the week. Was really, really good. Did a tremendous job in the dozen snaps that he played. Just big time impact for him. And then how about Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama? Did a really good job as well, starting at outside corner and thrown in there, and did a really nice job there. I thought Utah's offensive line was dominant against Stanford. They controlled the trenches. No pressure, open up run lanes was outstanding, absolutely outstanding. Staying in the state of Utah, I thought Devin Tompkins, surprise superstar of the week, was really, really impressive. I thought Sam Hartman's fourth quarter interception was huge in the turnaround there in getting that win from North Carolina over Wake. And then got to give an attaboy to Phil Longo as offensive coordinator of the week with a great game plan. North Carolina was trailing 45-27 midway through the third quarter. Every possession must score for Phil Longo's group, and what a great job. They totaled 546 yards, 7 yards of play, 330 coming on the ground, 216 through the air, that converted on 50% of its third down attempts, scored on all seven red zone trips, generated 25 plays that went for 10 yards or more. 25 plays that went for 10 yards or more. Defensive coordinator of the week got to be Mike Elko. What a performance. 20-3. Limited Auburn to 226 yards, 3.2 per play. No snap went beyond 15 yards. Okay, that's not a bad Auburn performance. That was A&M taking it away. Elko's group allowed just 4 third down conversions over 16 attempts, generated 4 sacks, forced 2 turnovers, including a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. Just really, really impressive. Team of the week, I'm going to go with TCU. I thought they did a great job. I think Purdue was also one. But I think that you look at, obviously, being in a situation with Jerry Kill as an interim coach taking over for Gary Patterson, his good friend. We often see that play hard that next week. They got it done in a 30-28 win over Baylor that was detrimental to the Baylor group, no question. But TCU's offense to gash Baylor for 562 yards, 7.3 per play. Great effort from freshman quarterback Chandler Morris. Really, really impressive there. More game balls. Gave you the players of the week, okay? Besides Aiden O'Connell, running backs, going with Deuce Vaughn of Kansas State. At running back, Dwayne McBride of UAB. Wide receiver, Jackson Smith-Njigba of Ohio State. Big-time performance in that win against Nebraska. Jahan Dotson, he's gotten a few game balls this year. Great performance this week for the Nittany Lions of Penn State. Trevon Rudolph, Northern Illinois, really good game this week. Trey McBride, the tight end of Colorado State, was outstanding. Offensive line, you'd see a couple of Utah guys on there when they got the offensive line of the week, particularly left guard Nick Ford and right tackle Brandon Daniels were outstanding. I thought Christian Mahogany of BC, what a performance, though, getting Phil Jurkovec back and taking care of Virginia Tech. Is that the end for Justin Fuente? Not sure. Tyler Lindenbaum played well at Iowa this week, and Greg Long at Purdue at left tackle. How about on defense? How about Neil Farrell, who's played well for LSU recently? Defensive interior is good. Adelis Bell from Utah did a really good job. I thought Jacob Pozuznik played well at Michigan State on the edge, as is Aiden Hutchinson. Devin Lloyd, as I mentioned, from Utah, outstanding again. Ivan Pace from the Miami University Redhawks getting it done. But Alante Taylor at corner for Tennessee, great job there. Stephen Jones Jr., Appalachian State cornerback, did a really good job. Louis Cini of Georgia, really good job. And Elijah Hicks, the other safety at Cal. So I thought Beanie Bishop at Western Kentucky was also very, very good. So those are some game balls of the week that I had for you on this week's matchups. Let's get into a couple of questions that you might have before we head on out and get ready to do SEC football and beyond. Kevin says, Orgeron says Nussmeier will get playing time this week. What do you think of Nussmeier? Well, the reason why you're going to play both is the right thing to do at this point is to give both of them a chance. Duck's played well. He's practiced well. He's a cerebral guy. I think that Max has done a nice job, but he wouldn't be what I would call the answer. I think there's limitations in his game, and we're going to see him, Nussmeier. Got to see him play. I've seen him play. I've seen him play in practice. I need to see extended game time to get an evaluation of him. So we'll see where it goes from here. Kevin says, where was LSU's blitz been all season? Well, first of all, the blitz worked against Alabama's offensive line that was unprepared for it and hasn't protected well against the blitz. The reason why they blitzed so much is, A, they were being overly aggressive. They were taking a lot of chances. But the reason why they did it is because other people have had success against Alabama blitzing, mainly A&M. So that's why they did it. Why wouldn't they do it more? Well, look, blitzing is not the magic elixir. If you blitz and don't get home, particularly with the secondary issues that they have with all those guys, they could have been killed. So the reason why they haven't done it consistently is look at who they've played. You're going to run a blitz against Florida who doesn't throw it? All you're going to do is take yourself out of position against the run. You're going to blitz a bunch against Ole Miss when the ball comes out so quickly. The reason why you ran a high number of blitzes against Alabama is because Alabama likes to run some drop back, likes to run some shotgun, and they have trouble with their pass protection. So you don't want to run a lot of blitz on people that run gets the ball out really quick and runs a lot of tempo. So that's the reason for that. Why was LSU at times successful running the football? Well, I thought they had some success with it. I didn't think they were consistently successful. I think it's a lot to do with Alabama. I thought Alabama didn't play very well. I think that they stayed a little bit committed to the run, and I think that helped them. I didn't think Alabama played leverage or run very well in this game. So I thought it was a good job staying committed. I thought LSU had a couple of mistakes, a couple of turnovers. That was maybe the real difference in the game. And if they hadn't done that, might have won the game. Might have pulled it off. Certainly had a chance to pull it off late. In terms of the overview of that game, my thoughts are kudos to LSU for playing hard. I think most people, it's expectations, right? The expectation of LSU is that they quit. Nobody's playing. A lot of missing players. We expect them to get blown out by 50, and they don't. They play, and it's a moral victory. Okay, you know, that's all fair and true. They played better, and it was closer than I thought it would be. So kudos to them. For Alabama, the expectations are to win big, to do things, you know, in a better way that they were able to do it. Not a very good job. Not a very good job by Alabama. They've been up and down. This was a game in which you would think they would have played better. You'd think they would have played with more intensity. But my takeaway from the game was more about what Alabama wasn't, more than what LSU was. I think what it says is that LSU, playing a lot of young guys whose future is going to be on tape. And it's one thing to play loose. I mean, you know, LSU can play for a bowl game. You know, the young guys can. But the pressure is off LSU. I mean, they're playing loose. They're playing aggressive. You know, and Alabama just didn't match their intensity. Why? I think that's part of the problem and part of the issues that they're having right now. Appreciate the questions there, Kevin, and appreciate everybody that's joining us. Again, a reminder, detailed breakdowns of all these games inside the film room over at LandryFootball.com. So check that out today. Take advantage of the football season sale. Make sure that you check out this podcast. Sign up for it. How to do that? Go to LandryFootball.com. Find out how to sign up for the podcast, and you'll be glad you did. And join us there, and that way you'll get notification when we go live. So, and when the show's dropped. So appreciate you joining us. We'll join you at the top of the hour for SEC football and beyond, where we're going to go into detail of all the games with all the teams. Appreciate you. Take care, and we'll talk to you in a little.